And you're very welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast ahead of Ireland against Scotland in the final round of the Autumn Nations Cup this weekend. Donal Lenihan, Bernard Jackman and Wes Liddy are with me to talk through the Irish team and the Scotland team and everything else rugby besides. You're welcome, lads. I guess we'll start, Donal, with the Ireland team. And it's been billed as the strongest team that Andy Farrell could put out there. We've reverted to the back row of Doris with CJ Stander at six and Peter Mahoney at seven. Conor Murray keeps his place from Georgia last weekend. And we have Bundee Aki and Robbie Henshaw switching roles in the centre. And what do you make of the team, first of all, Donal?
It's a bit of, I suppose, what we've got used to over a long period of time now. I'm not quite sure. Is Andrew Conway injured or what's the story? Is he out of...
I've heard nothing to suggest that he's injured. I can only presume, we can only take it that he is out of the match day 23 for whatever reason. I can't understand either.
Well, I don't understand. I mean, he's been consistent throughout, the Six Nations when we had it. Any game that he's had, Hugo Keenan has done well, but I would put Andrew Conway ahead of him. Johnny Sexton was always going to come back, is badly needed. I think we saw Jemison Gibson-Park against both Wales behind an outstanding pack with a lot of quick ball. He looked really sharp. Then, flip side of that, we saw him behind a pack that was under pressure against England and didn't perform as well. I thought Conor Murray has shown signs over the past couple of months that he's getting back to where he was, so not overly surprised there. Look, I think, when you look at it, we've the same back row starting that was blown off the park against England, but with Will Connors out, I think Van der Fleer hasn't taken his opportunities when they've come up in this autumn series. So I'm not overly surprised either, but when you're looking at strength and depth, the fact that Andrew Porter has to start six internationals in a row, I suppose it doesn't reflect really well on either Fidley Beelam or John Ryan. I don't understand why they haven't given a starting role. And also, I think if you were Leo Cullen, remember we've two back-to-back Heineken Cup matches coming up over the next two weekends, I'd say Leinster would be raging, particularly with Tadhg Furlong out as well, that Porter has accumulated so many minutes. We talk about player welfare and looking after players. The fact that he's so many minutes accumulated over the last 7 weeks with two huge games coming up in Europe. I mean, there's only four pool matches this year as opposed to six. So that makes it incredibly tight. I can imagine Leo Cullen won't be too impressed. But overall, look, I think it's probably along the lines that we would have expected.
Probably is, Bernard. I think that's fair to say. I was just reading through the reaction underneath the IRFU's Twitter feed from some fans. There was an air of disappointment about the team selection, but I think maybe that's based on the collective performances of this Ireland team over the last few weeks, more than the players individually themselves, who would be considered, I guess, the strongest available. Does it just boil down to, Bernard, now that we need a performance from this team?
Yeah, I think so. I think Andy Farrell and David Nussafour and the players will have sensed the frustration with Georgia in particular. But I know they go back to the fact that they've won, all the games they expected to win, and only lost to to England and France away. But realistically, there's elements of probably those two losses that there's question marks around. And then obviously the second half against Georgia went completely differently than how we expected. Generally those tier two teams tire the second half, but we just couldn't put them to the sword. So I do think this is a very strong team, and if they weren't a performer to lose, you can't blame experimentation on it. That's the challenge. I think we probably missed an opportunity last week. I thought we went very strong against Georgia, and I agree with Donal. I don't think there was any need to play Porter last week or again and have him fresh for both this game and obviously from first provincial requirements. We went really strong and it didn't work. So there's pressure on now to get a performance this week. And it's going to be really interesting how much of an influence Johnny Sexton has. Can he make the whole team better? And I think sometimes that's what people don't understand who are critical of him. They look at his own individual performance and see a few errors creeping in. But the reality is, I think Andy Farrell and Mike Catt need Johnny Sexton. They need him to go in there, galvanise the team, organise them to a certain extent. And hopefully we get a reaction this week and finish this block on a high. Because I think if we didn't and we had a poor performance and potentially lose, I think there will be a hangover coming back into Six Nations, which, as we know, is much closer to normal.
it's a pretty damning indictment, isn't it, that we still rely so heavily on a 35-year-old out half to get this team going?
Well, look, just for Dunlop and Wesley come in, I think this would be the area that I would say David Nusafour probably needs to clamp onto or to really focus on. You know, Farrell's got to coach this team, and the coaching staff are together now, and they've been signed up. There's obviously some contract negotiations, and that's going to be a big deal in January, February. But realistically, you know, I think at specialist position, we probably have a couple of hookers in the system now, so that's probably not a priority. But certainly tight head prop 9 and 10, you know, we need to basically see some people being fast-tracked so we have more depth there. If Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton and Ty Furlong are able to start in the World Cup, that's brilliant. But realistically, I think we've got away with murder, really, because they've had such longevity in those positions. And it's not clear now who the next guys up are. And that would be, you know, for me, a priority for Nusafour to make sure that, like at first, there's not something against players. They're the best in the position, and that's fine. But we do really need to be looking at, in a system where we control pretty much everything, to try and make sure we've got a better strategy to develop the next crop of specialist positions in particular.
How do you feel about this team, Wes, that this is seen as the strongest team still, despite the fact that a lot of these guys perhaps haven't had form? I'm talking about Conor Murray. You know, is Peter Mahoney still the answer at 7, albeit what he can do in the line-out, and he's had a couple of very good games recently. How do you feel about this team?
How do I feel about this team? It's a complicated one to answer, Hugh.
Well, that's why I asked you that exact question, because I'm guessing how you feel about this
how
team.
How do I feel about this selection? I'd agree with the lads. Andrew Conway is probably the most obvious one. I think, in fairness to him, forward passes aside, there was probably hints of what Stockdale could maybe offer in attack from 15 last week. Maybe the justification there. Arguably, Chris Farrell's a little unlucky. At 13, I know Bundy was playing very well prior to the international camp, but I thought he's done alright in the opportunities he's got. I see why they've picked Herring. Obviously, I'd imagine it's an answer to the set piece problems. Maybe rightly or wrongly, Kelleher's been scapegoated a bit for the line out. I suppose where that would bother me is that I don't see Rob Herring being a long term first choice hooker for Ireland. So it's kind of a retrograde step or a holding pattern. And equally, with all due respect to three great players, I think that's the same with the balance in that back row. I mean, they've possibly fudged a call there because you're dealing with some big personalities and some experienced guys and one very promising youngster that maybe... Look, I think they know the balance of that back row isn't ideal, but yet, here we are.
How close do you think Dan Levy was to getting a look in, given that the back row and the breakdown has been a big issue for us?
I don't think you can say he's that close. He hasn't played enough, to be honest. I think it's probably the fact that he and Van der Vleer, to a lesser extent, haven't played that has kept that back row together, because there isn't necessarily a really obvious alternative that are in excellent up-to-the-minute form.
Mm. Okay.
I think you, sorry Hugh, I think it would have been irresponsible to bring Dan Levy in at this stage. You know, he's only started one game. He was out for 19 months. There is no question that if Dan Levy gets back to anywhere near the form he had prior to that horrific injury, then he is your 7. He is exactly what's been missing. So therefore, I'd be quite happy to just bide my time. There's another 3 months before the Six Nations. You're now talking about a lift in level because of the 4 Heineken Cup matches that are coming up between now and the start of the Six Nations. And if Levy puts his hand up and is as competitive as he was, then automatically he goes into that 7 slot and you have a totally different dynamic in terms of the way to the balance of your back row as well. So
I think, I think I was talking to someone during the week in one of the provincial camps, and I think there's a bit of talk that maybe breaking the bubble is a bit of an issue when it comes to bringing people from outside the squad as it stands in. When you saw, like, you know, Finlay Beelam coming on at Loosehead, when you've someone like, say, James Cronin, you know, last week was a kind of a strange one as well. So that probably plays a little part with potentially Levy or people of that ilk as well.
On the Beelam one, Wesley, like, they did bring Eric O'Sullivan into camp, so... you know, I can understand they want to limit the amount of people they bring into camp, but I just don't see the logic in Finney Beelan being playing Loosehead last week. I think it's a big kick in the teeth. It's a missed opportunity for Eric O'Sullivan if he's someone they raise. I know Killer's injured. But for me, that's not a logical decision. Or you can't see... Do they see Finney Beelan going to the World Cup in 3 years' time as one of our best two and a half or three Looseheads? Like, I think it'd be a stretch, you know? And the fact that he's not involved this weekend... That was a strange one. I think we missed an opportunity to develop, to give someone a chance.
It arguably wasn't fair on him either.
No, it wasn't fair on him. No, I agree.
Can I ask you, Donald, about Ian Henderson this weekend? I really want to see a big performance from him. A lot of focus has been on James Ryan since he burst through, and I guess his level of performances for Leinster and then for Ireland. He captained Ireland during this Autumn Nations Cup, and I'm sure will be a future Ireland captain. But Ian Henderson is somebody that seems to have bucket loads of talent, but just for whatever reason, Donal, hasn't hit that consistent level of top form that has, that we have seen the best of him on a regular basis. Is that being too harsh on him, or is that fair comment, do you think?
No, I think it's a fair comment. Look, I've been tracking him since he was on the Ireland under 20 side. He kind of mixed between the second row and the back row there, but he stood out in the best of company. I think he was in an under 20 side that played their World Cup in South Africa. And he played against South Africa. Physically, he was up there with the best of what the South Africans could offer. He was clearly a player that was going to make an impact at full international level. He's an incredibly gifted athlete. I think he made a major impact in terms of, taking that calling pressure off James Ryan last week. I think the lineup certainly structurally was far better. I think he'll continue in that role this weekend. But I go back to the Lions played against the Hurricanes in the Wednesday between the second and third tests in New Zealand. And the guy was off the charts. He was outstanding in terms of his set-piece play, but his quality of his work in the breakdown and in the loose, his handling skills. And, I came away from that game thinking, God, this is the guy who's going to drive Ireland forward in the future. I was shocked when I read the programme notes. I think he had 55 caps coming into last weekend. So there's a phenomenal track record there behind him. He's now at the stage of his career. I mean, he is the senior second row, despite the fact that James Ryan was elevated to captaincy for the last two games. But I'm with you in terms of, I think he has so much more to offer. There's, he seems to be one of these guys. I don't know him, but he gives this appearance of being very laid back and that comes across. But, he is the guy that can, James Ryan is an outstanding player. We all know that. But he is a lot of responsibility. And if you like, he is the player that the opposition will focus on from a lineup perspective, to get at, to put pressure on him. So therefore, Henderson is almost getting a free ride, despite the fact, as I say, that he has more caps, that he's been on a Lions tour. But I agree with you. I would love to see him stepping up to the plate and, forming what could be an outstanding athletic second row pairing with Ryan right the way through to the next World Cup.
Bernard, he kind of reminds me of Tony Buckley in that, he just seems to have this really raw ability. He's a better athlete than Tony Buckley was, but what I mean by that is temperament. When Tony Buckley was at his aggressive best, he was a wrecking ball. We didn't see enough of it, nowhere near enough of it. But Henderson, when he's at his best, can be up there with the best in the world. We just don't see it regularly enough. And I wonder, is it down to attitude, do you think? Just aggression that he seems to be lacking sometimes?
Yeah, he's just a little bit frustrating, and that sounds terrible because he's achieved so much, and he's captain in his province, and he's normally when he's fit, he's a starter for Ireland. But I think we all know the potential he has, and he's not influencing games at the level at the moment that he definitely can. But hopefully, I would agree with Donal. I think the problem at the moment for Henderson is, everyone's talking around who will end up being James Ryan's partner. Whereas the reality is, it should be who will end up being Ian Henderson's partner. And that's probably the level of talent he has. And I would love to see him, a reaction this week. I think the Scots are going to put it up to Ireland up front. And him and James Ryan together sharing that responsibility, leading the pack together, particularly him looking after the line-out. It could be a huge part of helping James Ryan, you know, do the other stuff. Because I think James Ryan's game is, you know, he's not performing at a level that we know he can as well, because collectively at the pack, you know, it's very individual rather than a collective performance at the moment for a forward point of view. So I think the, both those in the second row together, making sure that the nuts and bolts are tight, would be huge.
He's a lot on his plate though, James Ryan. Doesn't he burst? Like, I mean, you think about, like, the line-out has been malfunctioning, you know, and he's been stepped into the captaincy role. The pack have been blown out of it. The maul has been a problem. Like, the guy can't just relax and concentrate on his own game at the moment.
And look, we've all been there, packs that are getting beaten up, and it's demoralising. You feel like a schoolboy when the scrum is coming back on top of you. When you go for a line-out drive, you know, and you don't get any purchase, you don't get any go forward. It's psychological blow after psychological blow. And then, you know, I just thought he gave away a penalty against England where he tried to clean out Billy Vunipola. It was just out of frustration, you know. But again, it's not just down to him. He is working really hard. The problem at the moment is we all seem to be on different pages, and he's taking on responsibility. He's captaining the team. And wanting it doesn't necessarily mean it's gonna happen. It's a case of everybody doing their job. And I think I said to Wesley, like, for Toje, he looks like he's the best second row whoever, you know, laced a pair of boots the last couple of weeks for England. But it's because, you know, Launchbury does what he's supposed to do. You know, the front row look after that. The back row are looking after their area. And that's the issue. So I think our players at the moment don't look as good as they can be. And that's very difficult for them individually. But I'd like to think this is going to be the climax of 8 weeks, and we just see, you know, we see that unified performance with some real, I suppose, alignment between backs, forwards, scrum, line out, maul, etc.
Wes, you know, I guess the reality is Randy Farrell, and people can write this Automations Cup off in whatever way they want, but if Ireland go out this weekend and don't put in a performance, Andy Farrell is under a lot of pressure. That's the reality.
Yeah, I just go back to what Bernard said just for 1 second before coming to that.
Of course.
Yeah. James Ryan, like, I think this might actually stand to James Ryan this period of time in a bizarre way. Not that he needs help, like, but I think his demeanour post-match has been impressive in that he's been, you know, clearly demanding of more of himself and others. I think he has given away penalties and things like that out of frustration, but it's been out of a desire to take on more responsibility. So I think maybe it's something that he will grow from in time. I think with Henderson, I think Birch hit the nail on the head. It's the balance of the second row partnership, and also the balance with the rest of the pack in terms of who's fulfilling what role. And I think Henderson's going to find himself, like, we're talking about, we're always having the conversation of who's going to partner James Ryan. I think that's going to intensify, because I think we've two outstanding prospects in Ryan Baird and Thomas O'Hearn about to come through, and Henderson's going to basically almost have his chance slip by his face, I think, if it continues. But again, they're real rangy kind of second rows, so maybe you need a real workhorse at six to complement the kind of wider, more athletic skills that guys like that would bring you. So I think it's just maybe that, like, Henderson obviously has to bear some responsibility, but maybe we haven't found a way to facilitate the athleticism that he brings to things as well.
So the balance is wrong, is what you're saying?
I think sometimes you have to, if you're picking a guy who has obvious flaws but has obvious strengths, there's no point picking him and not trying to facilitate him showing his strengths. Now, obviously, he has to continue to try and improve and fit into the team. But, you know, you pick someone to get them to do what they're good at. You don't pick them for what they're not good at. So I think there's a balance to be found all around there. And in terms of that pressure on Andy Farrell, like, I'm stunned at the amount of pressure that's on him. In light of, you know, a nothing tournament with no supporters and very little public attention on rugby at the minute. It's obviously evident in that David Nussafora was wheeled out or elected to wheel himself out for media duties during the week. It's obviously evident in some of the kind of us against the world stuff you're hearing from the players. It was evident for the first time in Andy Farrell's demeanour immediately post the Georgia match, cut a very different, much more frustrated figure than previous games. You know, you see the criticism from some very prominent recent ex-players who maybe for the first time don't have a personal connection to this management team and are freer to comment, like Brian O'Driscoll, like Shane Horgan, like Gordon Darcy, all in 1 week. I think there's big pressure on him. You know, like, I mean, to be honest, it sounds knee-jerk, but I can't see this going anywhere good, to be honest with you.
I know. Look, that does sound a little bit defeatist and pessimistic, but it's hard to see where the changes are going to come from. Donald, you look at the litany of ex-rugby league player coaches that have crossed the divide into union, primarily as defensive coaches. We're talking about Sean Edwards, obviously, being the best of those. Andy Farrell himself, Les Kiss when he was with Ireland, the choke tackle Australia. And they were all brought in to do a specific job around defence. Very few of them have graduated to head coach status, where they take on the attacking portfolio as well as what they were brought in originally for. And I just wonder, does Andy Farrell have the capabilities to change what is needed to get this Ireland team to play well?
Look, if you take the first part of it first, I mean, he transitioned from rugby league, one of the greatest rugby league players of all time. He's the youngest ever captain of Great Britain in league, captained them at 21 years of age. Outstanding league player, transferred into the union game, as always, struggled to find the position. Was he a back rower? Was he a centre? I think he never quite fulfilled, certainly never reached the heights in union that he did in league. Went straight into a defensive role in terms of with coaching with Saracens. And there are nuances to the game, certainly, the set piece game, the breakdown, that would be alien to somebody from a rugby league background. But that said, there is a plethora of head coaches who wouldn't have expertise in every single area of the game. I think that's where you need to get the balance right within your coaching setup. I mean, you look at somebody like Eddie Jones. I also think that, you know, the best coaches in the world over the past 10 or 15 years have been those in their mid to late 50s, even into their 60s. Graham Henry was in his late 60s when New Zealand won the World Cup in 2011. Steve Hansen had come through a massive apprenticeship. Ian McGeoghegan, likewise. So therefore, there is a massive learning curve for these guys. Andy Farrell was thrown into the head coach role. You know, he's still in his early to mid-40s. I would be more concerned about the overall coaching package that Ireland have at the moment, because I don't see the incremental improvements that we might have expected at this stage. And I put it to you, like, you look at that Ireland package, there's a Lions tour next week, or next summer, hopefully. How many fellas Warren Gatland be baiting down the door to get? He's already put it on record that he wants Andy Farrell to go to South Africa as his defence coach. That doesn't surprise me in the context that he was an outstanding defence coach. He's also a big personality around players. He's tailor-made for a Lions tour. Personally, I wouldn't let him go. If he's the head coach of Ireland and Ireland are scheduled to go on a tour somewhere else, then I think he has to stay with Ireland. I've no problem with an assistant coach who learn a huge amount going off at the Lions, having that experience for 2 months. But I think the balance and the mix in that Ireland coaching setup is coming under serious question now. And I've no doubt, yes, there is a question mark over Andy Farrell's overall coaching nous in a rugby union perspective. And it's a difficult place to learn on the job because you're always under pressure. I mean, we have reached the point, and I agree with you. It's not only is it about performance this weekend, it's about the results as well. They have to play well, but they certainly have to win. Like, when you consider we started this calendar year against Scotland, opening game of the Six Nations, that was Andy Farrell's first game. We won the game by 7 points, albeit Stuart Hogg dropped the ball going over the line early in the second half. How much development have you seen from that Irish team in the last 12 months? I would say very little. If you lose...
The trajectory is Scotland have gotten better and we seem to have regressed a bit.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that in my mind. And if you were to lose on Saturday, you're then going away to play Wales in an opening game where they're also under pressure. You know what I mean? It's never easy. No, I don't know whether that game is going to be in the Principality or whether there'll be any fans at it. Unlikely, I would imagine, at this stage. But when you consider, again, the fact that you've got England and France at home, we always saw that as an advantage. It's not a huge advantage if you're playing an empty stadia, as we have been over the past couple of months. So I think this game... you really need a performance and a victory to leave camp. That 7-week period, like Johnny Sexton, you could see he was out in the public. He was, arguing with the press, you don't think we've made progress. We're convinced that we have. But the only place that we can see progress is on the field of play. You can say what you like about how things are going in training, but we can only judge that evidence on the basis of what we see on a Saturday afternoon. And we have to see that next weekend.
Bert, Scotland are a different proposition than they were at the World Cup, certainly, and even at the Six Nations. Jaco van der Walt comes in, the Edinburgh Fly half, to make his debut at 10. Obviously, Finn Russell isn't there. Stuart Hogg is in to make his 80th cap. Darcy Graham on the wing, along with Duane van der Merwe, Duncan Taylor, Chris Harries in the centre. You've got a back row then, Blade Thompson, Jamie Ritchie and Matt Fagerson. Johnny Gray and Scott Cummings in the second row, and Xander Fagerson, Fraser Brown, Rory Sutherland. That's the Scotland team. You know, they'll be coming here fully intent on taking advantage of what has been a low ebb for Ireland. Do you think Ireland will win this game at the weekend? Would you be confident?
No, I wouldn't be confident. I'd be very worried about it, to be honest. And I think Scotland have found some players, particularly up front, where, look, at whenever Ireland needed to win, traditionally over the last 10 years, seeing Scotland coming up in the fixture list was a welcome surprise, because we've been able to bully them. And I know the game in February was very tight, but going back to the World Cup, that's how we won the game. We weren't in great form, but we really went after them up front. We were more physical than them, and we had a very easy win. Now, papered over, obviously cracks, and we saw afterwards all wasn't where it needed to be. But they have found two props who may go to the lines, Rory Sunderland and Xander Fagerson, two guys who are shown a huge amount of potential. Jamie Ritchie is a handful. And, you know, part of the reason I was more confident going into this game was I thought they might start Duncan Weir, who has been playing for them, but Duane van der Merwe has qualified now. Obviously, it's his first cap. But the difference between Scotland now and Scotland pre-World Cup is they're way more pragmatic. So Gregor Townsend has said, let's stop giving away easy tries. Let's tighten up a little bit here and become harder to beat. And they've, in conjunction with that, they've found some probably harder, more physical players. So I am worried about this. I mean, their scrum is very strong. Peter Devilliers, the former French Stade Francais prop who worked as scrum coach for South Africa, Stade Francais, is now a consultant there. Steve Tandy's in as defence coach, obviously ex-Ospreys, and they seem to be much stronger defensively. They're not the best team in the world, and I think we should beat them, but you can't be confident based on some of the flaws in our game we've seen. And just going back to Donal, there's a guy probably who's left the environment. So if you look at post-Joe, so Andy was in the system, Simon was in the system. You know, they brought in Mike Catt. Richie Murphy, sorry, yeah. They brought in Mike Catt to replace Joe. John Fogarty came in to replace Craig Feek. So it's probably not a huge amount of change. But one guy that did leave, who was maybe behind the scenes, a guy called Mervyn Murphy, who'd been at 5 World Cups, a video analyst. He's down in Connacht now helping Eric Elwood out. But he has a huge amount of rugby knowledge. And I remember, you know, that the likes of Paul O'Connell and fellas coming in from camp on a Sunday night would go straight to Merv to look at their clips. So there was that personal touch, a guy who's not involved in selection, giving feedback. But also, he knows every team in the Six Nations incredibly well. He's up to date on the trends of the game, and he gets that he played professionally in the early days for Connacht. So I think that's probably someone who could have been there. Maybe not the stat man that whoever they have is, but who understands rugby. And at the moment, they look like a team who are it's not all connected. So the attack is working in a silo. The line-out's working in a silo. You know, the kicking game seems to be not connected to the defence, etc. So there might be an argument for maybe someone in there who, if Andy Farrell's big thing is charisma, you know, culture, etc., someone who has a real deep ingrained knowledge of the game, who can connect all the assistant coaches together, might be something that maybe we made an error in.
Those words, you know, charisma, culture, Andy Farrell has spoken about this since he's come into the job, Wes, about wanting the players, you know, to operate in an environment that is different from Joe Schmidt. It's a little bit more relaxed. We've kind of touched on this already, but, you know, surely they are secondary to performance and they are secondary to actually winning matches. And by virtue of winning and putting in performances that enable you to win games, you automatically create a culture, do you not? One doesn't come before the other.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could argue it does sometimes. Like, other teams have made an effort to put those building blocks in. I always thought, though, there was... like, you don't want to sound wise after the fact, but this has been brewing since before the guy even coached the game, like, that there was a lot of potentially a lack of substance around the rugby side of things, for want of a better phraseology. Like, charisma. I mean, I could care less how charismatic someone is, to be honest with you, but, you know... Yeah, I mean, there was always a fear that perhaps a little bit of lack of detail would be exposed. That fear has probably been exacerbated. You know, it's gonna take a lot to kind of... we haven't seen anything that suggests that it's about to turn. You got to give a guy time, but, I mean, I don't know. It wouldn't fill me with confidence going forward.
Okay, all right. A couple more things to talk about, lads, before we leave it for this week. Donald, pretty big story in Argentina about their captain, Pablo Montero, who was suspended and stripped of the captaincy a few days ago on the basis of a tweet or a social media post that he put out a few years ago, which was quite racist in its tone. And certainly when it was discovered, the officials in the Argentinian Rugby Union were quick to act on it. He was suspended. He was stripped of the captaincy. The players then threatened basically to strike unless he was reinstated along with a couple of others. That has now happened. But the upside, I guess the overall, what we're left with on this is that it doesn't send a great message really that Pablo Montero, for what was a pretty horrible comment to make, was effectively not being punished at all. And it's been seen now in international terms as kind of a token gesture that the captaincy was stripped, and it actually had no meaning whatsoever. What's your take on this?
His comments were appalling, but I think you have to factor in that he made those as an 18-year-old. What is it? Was it 9, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there were appalling comments, as were Petty, Guido Petty, the second row, talking about the Paraguayan workers that were working with in the family household. There were arrogant, stupid, appalling comments I think when those players look back at them now, 8, 9 years down the road, they put up their hands and they say, yes, they are appalling. But that said, I think there had to be some form of punishment. He did lose the captaincy, and he's been stood down for the Tri Nations decider against Australia this weekend. But if you take it back to 2 weeks ago, and you had, you know, we saw the difficulties that this Argentine group of players have had. They're on the road for between 3 and 4 months. They were in lockdown in Argentina for 2 weeks, in Uruguay for 2 weeks, in Australia for 2 weeks. There was something like 15 players had COVID between the players and management. So if ever you had a group of players that were united as one, I think it is this group of Argentinian players. They went out, we saw the scenes when they beat New Zealand for the first time ever, the non-playing members of the squad bouncing up and down in the stands. I mean, it was infectious. So therefore, I'm not surprised that there's been a sort of a kickback internally, because that group were so tight. But I think there was and is responsibility on the Argentine Rugby Union to offer sanctions that were more lasting and more impactful. But that said, I do have a degree of sympathy for a player who, as an 18-year-old, said something 8 or 9 years ago, which clearly, and you've got to listen to people like Mario Ledesma, Agustin Pichot has come out in support of him, Agustin Creevy, the former captain, who know this individual 10 times better than we do. And but, you know, it's the world we live in now. There's a suggestion, you know, the because Argentina didn't mark the passing of Diego Maradona as well as maybe they should have. And certainly if they knew that New Zealand were going to do what they did, that incredibly impactful scene of...
the jersey.
Of the jersey being presented as the Maoris did for Anthony Foley on that incredible night in Thoman Park, well, then I think Argentina should have been more cognizant of just how big a figure Maradona is in New Zealand. But you can't get away from the underlying facts here is that the tweets by all three players were incredibly racist, were appalling. And, you know, there's a lesson there. It doesn't matter whether you said it yesterday or 10 years ago. It's, you know, it's very difficult to stand over. But I do think the turnaround from the Argentine Rugby Union doesn't look well.
Birch?
Yeah, it's just broken there a couple minutes ago that they are, the sanctions are lifted, so there's no sanctions. They're free to play this weekend, which I think is a big call. I know the players, the rumour is the players threaten to go on strike, and they are incredibly tight. But my own...
So basically, just to come in there, so basically I have it on file here. So they will miss, Matera has been reinstated as captain, the players' suspensions have been lifted, but they will sit out this weekend's game against Australia.
Okay, so there is a punishment. I think there has to be punishment. There has to be a punishment, and... I think the fairness, the UAR probably were caught because of the strength of the playing group, and obviously not want to jeopardise missing out in a game. The rumour was they were going to go on strike, but pretty unpleasant and doesn't reflect well on rugby, really.
Yeah, okay, guys, I just wanted to touch off that. We'll leave it for this weekend. We'll talk next weekend. We're hopefully on the back of a more positive performance. I'll ask you quickly how you think it's going to go. Wes, I'll start with you.
I'm going to try and be positive and say Ireland will get it done narrowly.
Okay.
I have no confidence in that.
Okay, an unconfident tip for Ireland. Donal?
I'm not exactly jumping out of his socks either. The one thing I will say is when I saw the fact that Hamish Watson wasn't starting, I kind of went, yes, that's a huge positive from an Irish perspective, because I think he's up there with Underhill and Tom Curry in terms of that work that he does in the breakdown. So I think the back row they've ended up with Richie at 7 is actually very similar to the back row that Ireland will have. And I think marginally that tips me back towards an Ireland win, but I wouldn't have any huge confidence in it for all the reasons that we've spoken about.
Bernard, last word.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm trusting these players, the experience they have to get to an emotional level where we're good enough to win this weekend. And I think it's important we do.
Okay, live coverage on RT Television, RT Radio this weekend, and online. Gents, enjoy the match. We'll talk to you next week, and thanks everyone for listening.